ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you feel lonely at work?
I work at a company of 10 in a team of 4. I crave connection, and at work I feel lonely.
That's Jade, and you'll hear more of her story later. And you'll find out what can drive an increase in workforce connection, and you might be surprised. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and you're listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. Now, it's been reported that loneliness is a public health crisis, with Australian organisation Ending Loneliness Together's 2023 report showing one in three of us experience feelings of loneliness at any given time. That's a lot. And as you heard, loneliness, of course, extends to work. Connie Noonan-Hadley is an organisational psychologist and a research associate professor at the Boston University Question School of Business. Connie, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
How would you define work loneliness, Connie?
Work loneliness is the distressing experience of having less social connection than desired at work, which sounds like a very academic definition. I fully acknowledge that. But each word does kind of matter. Like, for example, the distressing part, Sarah Wright and I, my colleague from the University of Canterbury in New Zealand, really wanted to make sure that was inserted in our definition, because sometimes people will say loneliness is social isolation or just being separated from people. But you can be separated from people and not be distressed about it. So loneliness is the experience of unwanted social distance and social absence. And then the other thing that's really important about it is that our definition allows for each person to set the goal. So what I need from the social life at work is very different than what you might need. And it's a very subjective experience. So I can't tell you you're not lonely. I can't tell you are lonely. And I also can't tell you whether it's distressful or not. This is a very much an individual subjective experience, but with tons of group implications and potential interventions. So just, you know, one thing I'll say is often people miss it. They feel distressed, but they don't know that it's because of this lack of social connection. They'll often misattribute it in our research to things like, I just don't like this job, or I'm unhappy with some other aspect. Maybe it's working remotely, or maybe it's working from the office. They'll blame it on other factors, but when you get underneath it, it's actually this feeling of disconnect that's creating that sort of angst and lack of satisfaction.
You've designed a work loneliness scale that people can use to diagnose themselves. How does it work?
Oh, it's very simple. That's the good news. And it's free, even better news. It's 5 questions. So as scientists, we always like to ask more than one question about a phenomenon. It just helps make sure the data is more robust. One of the things that we did that was different than previous studies is we actually asked people how often they felt lonely at work directly. And previously, that wasn't thought to be the right thing to do because it was this thing that people wouldn't want to self-report it. But I think the conversation has become widespread enough that people are now ready to self-attest to that question. But then we ask other more indirect questions too. Like, one of the best ones that we find to predict outcomes is, do you have enough people who would have your back if you needed any kind of support or help at work? And that's a really great barometer for whether people look around them and they say, hey, you know, who's behind me? You know, who's with me on this? And through those 5 different questions, we aggregate them. We actually take a sum of them. We have been able to define 3 different levels of loneliness. So we have the low, or maybe even perhaps no loneliness. And then we have the moderate levels, and then we have the high levels. And what we see when in a new study we have with 1,000 people, we find that 47% of them said that they were either moderately or highly lonely based on those metrics. It's a real widespread issue, but we do have the tools to diagnose it now.
And if you'd like to do the survey, you can write to us at thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. We'll send it to you, and you'll be making an anonymous but very valuable contribution to Connie's research.
Thank you.
Let's go to the why a little bit. Why should organizations care about work loneliness?
So one of the first places you can go to is thinking about this medical correlation with loneliness is if you have a group of highly lonely people, start thinking about the level of healthcare claims that you have. That can cost a lot of money in the billions of dollars a year, because people might be feeling, you know, sicker. They may have mental health issues that are keeping them away from work. But certainly also their productivity is likely to be less strong because they're mentally not as committed and engaged in the work. Teams probably aren't working as frictionlessly as possible. And then also you're going to find satisfaction and intent to quit much higher.
And so why is work loneliness becoming such an issue now?
Well, I think the pandemic accelerated a trend that had already started. The reason Mark and I started studying before the pandemic is because we were really worried about that. And people have blamed different things. I mean, they've blamed social media and the rise of smartphones. They've also blamed COVID for sure and remote work. And those are likely to all be part of the reason why it's becoming more prominent in terms of conversations and concern. But I think it's much bigger than any of those factors. I think the reason we're talking about loneliness so much right now is because the lack of social connection, and which is unfortunately, again, pretty prevalent. If you think about my latest study, 47% of people said that that they were experiencing this at work. And others have done it too. Gallup has a worldwide survey, by the way, also that their latest data shows 22% of the workforce was lonely a lot of the day yesterday. So, you know, I think that we're talking about it because it's big and it's affecting so much of our world. It's making people, we talk about languishing at work instead of flourishing at work. So, you know, there, I think, again, it can lead to mental health conditions. It can lead to other types of things too we worry about, like, you know, polarization of attitudes. And, you know, that can happen from people being separated and feeling lonely from each other. So I think we're seeing it, you know, again, coming up over and over again because people have started to recognize the importance of this, and they are ready to do something about it.
Connie, I know that some people are blaming hybrid and remote work for lack of connection.
Fully remote work in our studies does have a correlation to loneliness. It's not as high as other factors, for one. I would say if someone never interacts with any colleagues in person, that creates a risk factor for loneliness. In our studies, consistently, we find that whether you're 5 days in the office or 1 day in the office, it has essentially the same relationship to loneliness. So some amount of in-person work, I think, is a social lubricant and an enabler, but we just have not seen strong evidence that there's some magic number across, you know, organizations and people, or that it's like a real quantity game. It's always going to be about the quality.
Connie, we've referenced your research for those who would like to know more. Do you want to just talk us through how it worked, how you put it together?
So what we did is we took 1,000 U.S. knowledge workers and we did a big study with them with a survey. And then we followed up with a subset of them and we collected their stories on audio, which is why I love your show because you basically do the same thing every single week. But for us, it was a real thrill to be able to hear people speaking. And so in this study, what we were trying to figure out is what should companies do about it? What should companies do about loneliness? We gave them options. We said, here are 8 different things that organizations tend to do to help people make connections. And they range from really easy things like 5 or 10 minutes of chit-chat, non-work sort of conversation at the beginning of a meeting, to having an offsite retreat with some social hour embedded in it. And we asked about these 8 things in different ways. So first way we said is, hey, how often is this happening in your organization? And we saw huge differences between the people who were not lonely and those who were highly lonely. And the people who were not lonely had 31% more activities just available to them. And these were typically voluntary, you know, activities. So they had just such a greater set of options for them to get to know their colleagues. And then we also asked everybody, regardless of whether they ever experienced these things in their organization, to tell us, imagine that you have this option in front of you. What will you do? And we didn't just say, would you go or not go? We really wanted to be fine-grained. So we said things like, if there's a happy hour, are you going to A, not go at all? Okay, that's the lowest level. B, are you going to go talk to a few people and leave quickly? I've been there. The next level up was, are you going to go and stay a while and converse with a few people? And then the highest level was, I'm going to go. I'm staying for the whole time and I'm really going to get to know a lot of colleagues. Because we wanted to just really understand, like, the reality of participation rates. What could we expect if this was offered? And what we found over and over again is 2 things. One, we found that the highest lonely people were less likely to engage fully in any of the activities, which is such a conundrum because it means that just offering things is probably not going to help the people who need it the most. There's going to have to be an extra step, and I'll get back to that in a second. But the second thing we found out from doing this is that we thought there was going to be all these custom packages required for people, depending on who they were, whether they were older or younger, whether they're parents or not, whether they're managers or individual contributors and so forth. And it, like, none of those differences really mattered. The top three things of the eight we gave them were meeting chit chat, communal lunches, and happy hours. And so what we told organizations coming from this is that, first of all, don't overthink it. Like, just start doing stuff. You don't have to invent some crazy elaborate, you know, themed costume type of event to get people to come. Like, keep it simple. Particularly, they really like free food. So keep going with that if you can. But then the second thing we realized is that you can't just put out an open invitation. You have to recruit people. You have to find those people who say no, because you shouldn't take their no's as a deeper lack of interest. Often these people really do want to go, but they don't feel welcomed. And so if they just see an email go out, they're going to not think it's for them. But if someone says, hey, Lisa, I'm going over this happy hour. Do you want to go with me? I feel kind of weird going by myself. How about you, we go together? Then you'll get those kinds of people. And so it takes a community to reach out to each other to make these things really work. It can't be just like, if you build it, they will come kind of approach.
And are people surprised that, you know, you're talking about organizations and their culture as opposed to putting the onus on the individual to work at their own loneliness?
They are surprised. And if you're a leader, it can feel a bit daunting. Like, oh gosh, one more thing I have to do. So, which I am sympathetic to. But I can't solve loneliness by myself. I can't make myself unlonely.
Good point.
You know, yes, you do have to make an effort. I mean, everyone needs to participate, including the people who are lonely, in this endeavor to improve it. But when you think about it as a social system, then the system architects and the system leaders have a lot of responsibility for creating the right environment. And like I said, it's about being thoughtful about the kinds of things you offer. It's also being about really intentional about who you invite and how you try to encourage people to attend. And there's also other stuff that they can do as architects. They can create a reward system that benefits this. So, you know, part of what the managers and leaders have to think about too is, if this is important to your organization, it's part of your core values, if you see the connection between having a cohesive and supportive work environment with the outcomes, the business outcomes you're trying to drive, then you need to invest in it. That means you need to put money into maybe social events, but you also need to put money into the people who are doing that work. Reward them for it in their performance reviews. Even you can even sort of set targets for the kinds of engagement that you're looking for. So, you know, it's a bigger problem than I can solve by myself.
Can we look at the risk factors in terms of individuals then? So are there some types of people more at risk of work loneliness than others?
What we do see is people who are more junior tend to be lonelier than managers, which makes some sense because they have less of a clear-cut connection, you know, to others. And also we find in a recent study that people feel that others depend on them. Like, you know, again, if you're a manager, they tend to feel a little less lonely, even though that's not exactly, it's like hierarchical support. It's not necessarily come upwards towards them. But the bigger factor that we find at the individual level is about their level of shyness and introversion, which, and this gets it back a little bit to this notion of, yes, you have to help yourself, but you also need to be intentional about reaching out to other people. Because if I'm shy and I'm lonely, then it's really hard for those people to take the initiative as much.
Listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National, I'm Lisa Leong, and my guest is Connie Noonan-Hadley, organisational psychologist and founder of the Institute for Life at Work. Okay, Connie, let's hear more now from Jade. This is not her real name, by the way, about her experience.
Okay.
I am someone who actively listens to my co-workers and likes to ask follow-up questions just to show that I'm engaged in what they are saying. There is usually small talk about our weekends. However, my co-workers never seem curious about the things I bring up about my life. I doubt they would remember any of my interests, even if I asked. My manager seems to connect with their manager more than their team. Last week, I mentioned to my manager that I was feeling lonely at work, and their response was not curiosity, but dismissiveness. I don't know why you are feeling lonely. Instead of, I'm sorry to hear that, Jade. How can I help you feel more connected? Or, let's grab coffee and have a good chat. Now, in addition to feeling lonely, I also feel a lack of trust that they'll support me. I have brought it up in multiple one-to-one meetings that I need connection, as it makes me feel good and do better work. But it doesn't seem to matter how many times I bring it up, nothing changes. Sometimes I think about quitting, but I enjoy my work too much. I don't know what else to do.
Connie, what's your response to Jade's situation?
Oh, I feel so much empathy for Jade. She's doing so much to help herself. And all she's receiving is confirmation that, no, it doesn't sound like people really care about her and about her well-being and who she is. You know, the first thing I would say is I want Jade to know, A, she's not alone. Again, those statistics I threw out there mean that even if you just apply it, I don't know how big her organization is, but as a percentage, it's very unlikely she's the only person feeling lonely in the office. And I commend her for being willing to self-assess and figure that out for herself and take that time to do it. The second thing I would want her to know is that she's been very brave, because loneliness can be seen as your social flaw, you know, and it can stigmatize you in an organization. So the fact that she was so clear about it to her manager is an act of bravery, and I think that is fantastic. And I'm so glad she did it, even if she didn't get the response that she was hoping for. And I hope that she will feel reinforced to do that, because this is how we break through these kinds of problems, is by bringing them into the light and talking about them. So now what to do when she's basically been told that the manager doesn't think she should have that issue, invalidated it, as well as said that, no interest in trying to help solve it. So what I would say in that case is, if Jade does like her job, there are a couple of different things she can do. One, I think she can try to find other colleagues that she can bond with outside of her immediate unit, which is not ideal because it takes extra work and maybe some extra time. But let me tell you about another study that I did with Sarah and some folks from a group called Work From Anywhere. We looked at remote workers who used co-working spaces or any other kind of third space for their job. So maybe a cafe or a library. Those people were so socially fulfilled with people that they weren't even in the same organization with. So, you know, maybe, I don't know if Jade has potential to work remotely, but maybe she could join like a really close-knit kind of fun co-working site and make some sort of other quasi-colleagues that could give her that social reinforcement during the day. Or if not that, then she could try to find other people in other areas of her office to get to know. And that also, by the way, has some benefits too, because you're not in direct competition with someone as you might be with a peer in your same unit. So I think she's got to start looking elsewhere outside of her immediate group. And then if that doesn't work, and then I would say, can you export what you like about your job to a different company or different environment, maybe even in the same company if it's big enough, doing the same work but with other people? Because I don't want to be too negative, because maybe over time she could convince the people around her to care and be more invested. But, you know, in the meantime, I'm saying, like, this is where I would say take care of herself and then tell her manager to call me, because I've got some thoughts.
Well, let's get to managers now, because you came up with a wish list for managers generated by employees you surveyed. So what themes emerged?
So the first thing always has to go to the data. So to try to collect information on this, you can do anonymous surveys using our tool or something similar. But it's also good just to have, like, honest conversations in a non-stressful time period. Go to lunch, you know, have a conversation. Say you've read this article, or give out the article and tell people to read it and then come discuss. So I think, you know, starting to understand what's going on is really crucial, because, again, most managers have no idea of really what people are feeling unless they have someone like Jade telling them. The second thing is to think about how can you adjust the workflows. And I'd say adjust them in two ways. One, we talk about adding Slack to the system, meaning can you create those gaps? So if you think about that one intervention that everybody loved, which was 5 or 10 minutes in a regular meeting to do just chit-chat, that's not hard to do. It doesn't cost anything. But what it does mean is that you have to shrink your agenda. So think about how can you build in some slack into how you do your work. And the other way that I would adjust the workflows is to create more interdependencies. And that means, can you find ways to pair people up more often and have them work in ways where they have to kind of have the give and take? Because although it may seem that I'm only focusing on sort of social separate from work, the best way to bond with people is actually through the work, doing the work, but having enough time to have these like conversations and jokes and things like that while you're doing the work. So if you can create different workflows where instead of like an assembly line handoff where people just hand off work down the line, but actually have them sitting, imagining like around a round table, hashing out the work together, that can be another way to adjust the workflow. And then I would say things like, definitely look at what is your social architecture? What can you add to your routines? And I have another study that looked at team rituals, and it wasn't specifically on loneliness, but we did find that the more teams had rituals, and those rituals could be designed around sharing personal knowledge or professional knowledge, but things like having certain kinds of stand-up meetings every week can create also a greater sense of cohesion and interpersonal knowledge and trust. So thinking about both like purely social events and other ways you can change the work to bring people together and give them, again, more space to talk. And then, you know, really you have to kind of customize your recruitment efforts. If you're a manager, hopefully you have enough bandwidth to be able to do that. But even if you can't solve everyone's loneliness problem all at once, if you have a large group, try to build in, you know, one-on-ones and other ways that you can start to get to know your people and build those kinds of connections over time. Because each person may need a little bit something different from you.
Mm. And what are some of the things workers can do themselves peer-to-peer, so with each other?
Find somebody who seems interested in having a conversation, and you only need 10 minutes. You do not need to set up some elaborate thing. There's been other research by Nick Epley and colleagues that said, like, even 10 minutes of people conversing on a subway train can create a greater sense of happiness and connection between two strangers. So, you know, people are desperate to feel that someone's noticing them, that someone's interested in them. So think about what Jade felt was that she was revealing stuff and nobody was following up with questions. Jade can do that for other people. Jade can find somebody else. And I think that'll also, by the way, help her loneliness. By trying to find someone else who may be feeling disconnected and helping them, she's going to feel better herself and build up her own sense of social support. Find somebody you don't know very well, but you're interested in getting to know well. Send them an email. Say, hey, I'd love to chat. And if you're in person, go stop by. If you're not, say, you know, do you have 15 minutes? I literally have no agenda except to just get to know you better. You seem really interesting.
All right, Connie, each week we ask our guests to provide tips that this working lifers can put to the test. It's called Try This. So can you give me a tip, please, for a manager or someone in leadership in an organization to help them tackle work loneliness?
Sure. So I will go back to this notion of collect some data. I really think that managers should take the time to understand what's going on with their workforce, understand how much of this is an issue. So use a survey, do the focus group, you know, do a lunch conversation about it. I think that that's the very first step, I would say, because you can't operate unless you have the information you need to know what's going on. And then in terms of employees, it really is the sort of the change you want to see. So don't wait for someone else to reach out to you. Reach out to them. You're gonna improve your life and you're gonna improve someone else's life at work. We're all busy. Just to be clear, I'm not advocating for a 2-hour lunch. I'm saying just a little touch point. And we've seen this, by the way, how much this matters, even when you think about just a little quick email afterwards to acknowledge, I really appreciated your contributions to that meeting. It was really interesting. It made me think differently about that. Being lonely means no one, you feel overlooked, unseen, unheard. So anything you can do to correct that for someone else is a step forward.
Thanks so much, Connie.
You're welcome. It's been real fun to be here.
Connie Noonan-Hadley is an organizational psychologist and research associate professor at Boston University Question School of Business. And if you'd like to take Connie's work loneliness test, send us an email to thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. We'll send it to you along with free resources employers can use to understand the work loneliness scale. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our podcast, share it with a colleague or a friend. You can do that on the ABC Listen app or anywhere you listen to podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, work it like a charm.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.